Ronaldinho takes, and David Seaman's cut off his line, and Brazil take the lead. Oh, how about that?
Shaqiri, here is Shaqiri. Is this the moment for Shaqiri? Yes!
Is Destination 2026, Houston's Countdown to the Cup.
Presented by Coca-Cola Southwest, Houston Methodist, NRG, and Quanta.
For the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Glenn Davis.
All right, welcome into Destination 2026, Houston's Countdown to the Cup. Always presented by Houston Methodist, Coca-Cola Southwest, Energy, Quanta. And, of course, Visit Sugarland, our newest of all sponsors. So, real excited for tonight's show. We got a lot to talk about. We are going to do a flashback to the 1978 World Cup. It was the first World Cup won by Argentina. Some say it was the most political of World Cups because there was a veil of things going on around the Argentine government at the time and that World Cup. By the way, it was the second World Cup in a row that the Netherlands got to the final. They would play in this one without Johan Cruyff. Monday night this week, Battiri did the screening of West Germany against Netherlands from 1974. So this is 4 years later. There's a lot happening in Argentina at the time. From a geopolitical standpoint, it was a country that was trying to put a pretty face on everything that was going on with its government. And it was a team that was led by Mario Kempes. But there is a part of this World Cup that was shrouded in a big question mark because there was a point in the tournament that Argentina had to win a game 4-0 against Peru, ultimately won 6-0. And it was how they were able to advance. They had to score 4 goals. They had to win by 4 in order to advance. They did. But to this day, there were some Peruvian players later in life. They beat Peru 6-0 that came out and were alleging certain things. It was never proven, but they were alleging a number of different things. So I think you'll like the flashback to the 1978 World Cup. And that was a Dutch team that came without Johan Cruyff again. It was an Argentina team that played maybe some a better brand of soccer and soccer that connected with them more than even the 86 team with Maradona. This team was led by Mario Kempes. He was the star of the tournament, scored 6 goals, scored 2 in the final against the Dutch. So a lot into that one tonight. I think you'll enjoy it. I do want to just kind of get you up updated on everything here in Houston because things are happening. As you go around downtown, you'll see things that's actively being prepared for when we're going to host the 7 matches. And again, we have 5 group stages. We have 1 round of 32, which is a knockout, and 1 round of 16. These will all take place at Energy Stadium, which will be temporarily renamed Houston Stadium. So over at Energy, and David Fletcher of Lone Star Sports and Entertainment's been on this show to remind us, but they're, you know, obviously going to be, I think, after the rodeo, putting in natural grass. So there'll be a field conversion. The corners of the stadium, I don't know if it's been done or not, but they're going to structurally modify those areas. They have to comply with FIFA standards and regulations. FIFA's really, really drilled down on doing things the way they want to do them, obviously. Seating capacity will be reduced a little bit and then return after to normal. But the corporate branding, that's why you can't have the Energy name there. That's going to be removed starting May 15th, from what I understand and the research I've done. Public transportation, they're trying to improve things. obviously with bus and rail services. Security is going to be massive for this thing, I think, due to the climate in the world right now, and to make sure people are safe. Edo, as you know, that is going to be the neighborhood that will be the official FIFA Fan Festival. There'll be, they'll have big screens there for live screenings. They'll have, I'm sure, music. You're going to have mini soccer fields. You're going to have plenty of beer flowing. You're going to have food courts. And that'll be a big area when it comes to the attracting of a lot of the visitors that come into town. Now, there are going to be people that come here that may not even get into the games. There are going to be people that come to Houston that are going to camp out and use this as a base to not only watch games here in Houston, but also go to Dallas or even Kansas City, because these are all very, very close, being in the middle of the country. So there you go. There's going to be a 13,000 square foot climate controlled hospitality venue. And that's going to be there to obviously keep people cool. The temperatures in this country, it was a problem in 94 during the World Cup. It's going to be a bit of an issue here, but as long as everybody's hydrating, whether that be with your favorite beverage, that's going to be a big part of it. Edo's getting revitalized. Some of the older buildings are getting knocked down. Obviously, they're going to move the homeless out. That's going to happen, and Houston's going to get cleaned up in a lot of ways. And downtown's going to have some more green space as well. Go to the Houston Sports Authority website. You can learn even more. So then let's talk about some of the green spaces. Burnett Balin Park, which historically Balin Park has got history for us soccer-wise, by the way. In fact, we used to practice over there a little bit, but apparently Balin Park is going to get a $23 million expansion, and it'll be a 75-acre community hub. Soccer, basketball courts, they're going to add a whole bunch of different stuff over there. So that's going to get revitalized. McGregor Park is going to have is apparently getting $10 million in federal funding in the third ward. To upgrade things there. And I think construction there is going to begin in 2026. You got the I-69 beautification process, which begins near the entry point of downtown. Again, it's a lot of cleaning up, replanting, greenery, that kind of thing, because of the World Cup. And then you got the Herman Park area as well. Which is apparently going to be a viewing zone in the tournament as well. So that's kind of interesting, I think, and smart, because I think it goes from the downtown Edo to the Herman Park area. And then I think organically we're going to have a lot of these watching spots that are going to pop up all over, I think, the city. You'll be on the lookout for that. So if you're in the Woodlands, there's going to be things that develop. If they're in Sugar Land, you're obviously going to have things there. Certain venues and bars are going to do great watch parties if you want to keep it in the neighborhood and you don't want to go downtown, or you may not be going to the games, but you still want to partake in the festivities of what is one of the most unique, is the most unique, and it will be the biggest sporting event ever hosted in Houston, Texas, in our history, just to go along with all the, all the great events we've hosted in the past, from Super Bowls to NCAA national championships to the Astrodome and all the great things that occurred over there with Elvin Hayes and U of H playing UCLA, all kinds of stuff. Main Street Promenade. Now, here's another 7-block stretch of Main Street in downtown. It's going to be completed in 2026, right before the World Cup. This is going to be an area where you're going to have wider walkways. There's going to be a whole bunch of trees there. There'll be some canopies. They are designing, quote, outdoor rooms for dining, social gatherings, and small events. It'll temporarily close sections of Main Street. And it's going to be just another addition to the whole Edo thing. But these areas are going to be important because there are going to be a lot of people hanging around downtown. I don't think there's any question about that. Now, let's get into tickets. Let's get into volunteering. There's a lot around that that's going on. And I think if you go to FWC26Houston.com, you can go there for World Cup merchandise, which would be a nice thing to have ahead of time. It's FWC26Houston.com. Also, you can get the information on volunteering there. Houston's going to need a ton of volunteers. You can volunteer and be a part of a World Cup historically. So that's a pretty cool thing if that's your type of connection and you would be interested in doing that. Now, also, for tickets, you go to FIFA.com, and you got to kind of sign up and get in line for the tickets. You got that. You can also go to LSSE.net for sort of hospitality and more tickets over there. So, you know, it's time to get in line. We have a friendly coming up too, by the way, November 14th. We got the Super Eagles of Nigeria who are still trying to qualify for this cup out of for World Cup 2026 out of AFCON, African nation. And they're taking on Venezuela. Venezuela got bumped out of the tournament. They were hoping to get in the playoff position. They didn't. Bolivia grabbed it. And the Vino Tinto is out. So November 14th here in Houston, you can get a look at the Super Eagles of Nigeria and Venezuela. Okay, so that's another one coming up as we get closer and closer, obviously, to next summer. And all right, so last night we had a really, really good Soccer Matters version. It was nice. We introduced a new sponsor, Slip Sliders. But we had Hugo Perez on. Now, Hugo Perez was on this show 2 weeks ago, I think, talking about his World Cup experiences. But he's been heavily involved in player development. He went to two World Cups for the United States. That's an interview, I think, if you're in player development, that's a can't-miss interview from last night. You can get the interview and you can get the podcast of both Destination 2026 and Soccer Matters over at ESPN975.com. You can also get it at Spotify Podcasts and Apple Podcasts, okay? So head over there for that interview, because if you're in player development at any level, professional level, youth level, college, whatever, this is a really honest interview with a lot said in there about the current state of player development in this country. I ask Hugo a lot of things, including, you know, how is it with all the money we throw at the game in the United States that we haven't created more attacking players and creative players? Why do we only have one Christian Pulisic? Why don't we have six Christian Pulisics? With the volume of people participating in the sport, with the money spent on it, you just have to shake your head and say, how is it not possible? Well, and that's where we get into talent identification, actual player development, and how we're developing players. So I think it's an interview you would like. Very informative, very different, because Hugo Perez is not afraid to say things. He's not beholden to U.S. soccer or, you know, any groups. He's speaking his honest truth, and we like honest soccer talk. That's the way we do it. All right, so go back and check that interview out. I think you'll like that. And again, we have in Houston 5 group stage matches, and then we have the 2 knockout stage matches as well. So it's going to be so exciting. First World Cup with 48 teams, by the way, which is a lot of teams. So our first game in Houston, of course, Azteca Stadium, the legendary Azteca Stadium, is going to open things up in Mexico. But then on June 14th, we got our first match here in Houston. 3 days later, on the 17th, another group stage match. 3 days later, on the 20th of June, another group stage match. 3 days later, on the 23rd, another group stage match. 3 days later on the 26th, another group stage match. So basically, after we play the opener here in Houston on the 14th, it's like every 3 days there's a game. Wow. Wouldn't that be amazing to go to all of them? Holy smoke. And then June 29th, we get a knockout stage game. Okay. And then round of 16 knockout stage game on July 4th. So that's our schedule here. Again, FIFA.com for tickets. Again, you can go to FWC26Houston.com if you want to volunteer. Also for merchandise, that's a great place to go as well. The merchandise is very cool. And or maybe pick up the official poster. Stephanie Leal was on our show who created the poster for the World Cup. That's got a lot of nice Houston and Texas connection to it. I've never seen an astronaut chesting a ball down, but it's very cool. It's very cool. All right, next segment, I do want to talk about a World Cup legend that actually was living here in Sugar Land, Texas, who recently passed. I had an opportunity to play against him. And sad to hear that he passed away, but he was a legit legend in his country, having played in the 1982 World Cup. We'll let you know who that is when we come back. We're going to take a break here. It's Destination 2026, Houston's Countdown to the Cup, brought to you by Houston Methodist, Coca-Cola Southwest, Energy Quanta, and, of course, Visit Sugarland. We'll take a break. We got more to come. Destination 2026 here on ESPN 97.5.
Messi, Fernandez, Di Maria, Lionel Messi. Messi's heading off! That's what they came for!
The best in Houston sports talk is ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. You're listening to Destination 2026, Houston's Countdown to the Cup.
Presented by Coca-Cola Southwest, Houston Methodist, NRG, and Quanta.
For the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Glenn Davis.
Germany's first corner. Went in height on it. It's gone through. Germany score! It's exactly what Brazil was dreading. Thomas Müller with his these World Cup finals sends a shiver through the nation.
All right, welcome back to Destination 2026. I'm your humble servant here, Glenn Davis, as we continue to talk soccer. Again, a reminder, get the podcast of Destination 2026 and of Soccer Matters. We got that block of 2 hours on a Tuesday and then our World Cup talk here on a Wednesday. You can get the podcast of the shows at ESPN975.com. You can also go to Spotify, Apple, podcasts, and you can get it there. Reminder again, if you are interested in being a part of the World Cup as a volunteer, you can go to places like FIFA.com. You can also go to FWC26Houston.com for merchandise and to volunteer. Ticket packages at LSSE.net. And of course, you got to get into that waiting line at FIFA.com for tickets. And again, we've got an amazing amount of games here in Houston. We got 5 group stage matches. We got 2 knockout matches. So much going on in Houston, Texas for this World Cup. It's going to be a historic time in Houston next June. And our first match will be on June 14th. Okay. So, that's number one. By the way, December 5th is when we're going to find out the draw of the World Cup and the groupings and everything else. First World Cup ever with 48 teams. All right, I said on my way to break that I had a World Cup star and a legendary figure in a country that recently passed. Jaime La Chelona Rodriguez was a legendary Salvadorian soccer player. I played against him when he was on Alianza. Also got to know Jaime better when I was down in El Salvador for a month calling the Central American and Caribbean games. And He was a commentator as well, so I got to spend some time with him there. Genuinely great guy, but a legend as a soccer player. And I think if you're from El Salvador, you probably put Mágico González as the most noteworthy player in history. And then, you know, I would think La Chalona, Jaime Rodriguez, would be second. Remarkable career on and off the field. So I believe he passed in Sugar Land, cardiac arrest, which is very sad at the young age of 1966. So 1982 World Cup, the only time El Salvador went. It was a big, big moment for the country. Jaime Rodriguez was only 17 years old at the time. He marked Diego Maradona when they played Argentina. Had an exceptional club career, which was breaking borders here when it comes to being an El Salvador player. He played in Germany, played in Finland, played in Japan. Most notably, a large portion of his career was played at Atlas in Mexico and León, and he captained these teams. Played over 200 appearances in Liga MX with 17 goals. Center back. It's quite a few goals. Good amount, for sure. 50 caps for El Salvador, and he played for the El Salvador national team between 1979 and 1991. Only had one goal for them. Did a lot post-playing career. Coached, was in leadership, took managerial roles, coached Alianza, coached San Salvador. He was involved with the Salvadorian Institute of Sport, which, you know, was working with the national teams and everything. Also did a lot in youth development. He founded the Academia de Fútbol La Chalona, football school, which pushed a lot of players through. But profound effect on El Salvador, profound effect on El Salvador's football community. Excellent defender. You heard Hugo Perez last night on Soccer Matters ESPN 97.5. You heard him talking about Jaime Rodriguez and what a good defender he was, and solid and strong. But he is, without a doubt, one of the most revered players in the history of El Salvador. Big part of Latin American soccer culture, too. He was born in San Salvador, 1959. Grew up in a modest household. Played a lot of street soccer, local fields. Starts getting a reputation. Good technique, smart, good defender. He got the nickname La Chalona, which basically translates in English to the Big Tortoise, which was, in essence, talking about his resiliency, strength, his style of play. As a youth player, he joined a number of youth teams. As a kid, apparently, what I'm told, he played kind of mature beyond his years. And as he gets later into his teen years, he's getting attention from El Salvadorian teams. So some of the top Salvadorian teams, Alianza, FAS, Firpo. In fact, we used to play a lot of friendlies when I was on the Houston Dynamos in the 80s against Salvadorian teams. Played against him and Mágico González as well. So let's go to the 1982 FIFA World Cup, which is a significant moment for the country of El Salvador. That's the big piece with Jaime Rodriguez. He was 17 years old in the tournament. Key role as a defender, obviously marked Diego Maradona, who's a rising star at the time. El Salvador didn't do well in the tournament, if truth be told, but they fought, he fought, and he got a lot of, because of those games, he did get some attention from others and peers and scouts worldwide. Had a great level of composure when he played. And of course, after that, he's considered as a young guy one of the most promising talents out of El Salvador. And then he gets the opportunity to play overseas. He goes to Germany, Bayer Uerdingen. It's a lower division team. Finland, KPV. In Japan, he played for Yokohama. And then, as I mentioned, Atlas and León in Mexico. good positionally, always in the middle, physically strong, good tactical understanding, didn't get caught out. Back in those days, me being a center back as well, you stayed in the middle. You ultimately wanted to be where the ball came. So you defended in the middle. And he was a sportsman, too, as a player. So he finishes playing, and then he goes and coaches Alianza, San Salvador, does the whole youth thing with Academia de Fútbol La Chelona, and then becomes part of, you know, trying to influence the overall sports policy and youth programs of El Salvador. And, you know, he's going at the game in a lot of a variety of areas, trying to improve it, which I think it's good. And then his nickname, obviously, it symbolized to a lot of people his resilience, his humility, the prideful side of being El Salvadorian. But he's one of El Salvador's greatest defenders, no question. He's a World Cup icon. He was a national hero. When I was in El Salvador, in and around him, you know, there are people coming up to him all the time, just like Mágico González. So, special guy, rest in peace, Jaime Rodriguez. Just sad, makes me sad, because he's in and around my age. And I'm not sure about the 17 years old, but he was young when he first got into the national team. But he was the youngest Salvadorian to play in the 82 World Cup, no question about it. So rest in peace, La Chelona, Jaime Rodriguez, and I believe last living in Sugar Land here in Houston, Texas. Just a hit here on the Dynamo. The Dynamo are playing at home against Portland on Saturday night. They got four games to go. They got to get it done. They've got Portland. They've got Nashville, San Diego, and Sporting KC. So two out of their four final games. They've got 12 available points. Two out of their final games will be at home. So Portland will be one of their two final regular season games. Then San Diego is the other one. And then they'll go on the road to Sporting Kansas City to end the year, also go to Nashville. Friday night, you have the Houston Dash taking on the Chicago Stars. They're also trying to get into the playoffs. Excuse me. They come off what was a loss in their last game to Utah, 2-0. Wasn't one of their better games, but they hope to turn it around against the Chicago Stars. By the way, Julio Grosso, former UT player, went over and played at Juventus in Italy. She is on the Chicago Stars, as is former Texas A&M and former Houston Dash, Shea Groom. So there's a couple of local connections going on there. Well, the Dynamo are in a fight, trying to get that ninth playoff spot. They're in a fight with San Jose, Real Salt Lake, FC Dallas. They're behind all three of those right now, but not by a lot. Austin tonight is playing in the Lamar Hunt U.S. Open Cup. And the other thing, I think, bigger news for the Dynamo is they signed Felipe Andrade. They've exercised the option on him. He was a loan player, so he'll remain a Dynamo player. But it's been a tough year, for sure. Dynamo are 8-13-9. And still have a hope to get into the playoffs. Okay, again, it's Spotify, Apple Podcasts, ESPN975.com, also where you can get the podcast of this show. Please keep following us, likes, hits, all that stuff. We're going to keep you updated on everything World Cup. Qualifying is not over in Europe. Qualifying is not over in Africa. Qualifying is not over in CONCACAF, so there's still a lot of drama to go here in the next couple of months when it comes to teams qualifying for the World Cup here in Houston. We're getting prepared for it. There's all kinds of things going on in the city, as we mentioned, and we will continue to mention as we continue to bring you this show, Destination 2026, Houston's Countdown to the Cup, each and every week right here on ESPN 97.5. Hope you enjoyed that recap on La Chelona, the great El Salvadorian player. I know there's a lot of people in Houston that are feeling real sadness with Jaime's passing. Of course, we got that great, very, very passionate Houston soccer community. One of my cohorts, Danny Mejia, who calls the Dynamo on the radio in Spanish. Obviously, very upset about this as well. I'm grateful to have crossed paths with him a little bit in my soccer life. All right, let's take a break. When we come back, we begin to talk here about the 1978 World Cup won by Argentina as the host country. In the final, they beat the Netherlands. We'll take a break here. It's Destination 2026, Houston's Countdown to the Cup. I'm Glenn Davis. It's presented by Houston Methodist, Coca-Cola Southwest, Energy Quanta, and Visit Sugarland. We're back in a flash.
You're listening to ESPN 97.5. This is Destination 2026, Houston's Countdown to the Cup.
Presented by Coca-Cola Southwest, Houston Methodist, NRG, and Quanta.
For the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Glenn Davis.
Ronaldo. Oh, genius! Absolute genius!
All right, final segment of the night tonight on Destination 2026, Houston's Countdown to the Cup, and the times are exciting as we inch closer and closer to next summer. Energy Stadium, 7 matches, and of course, 2 of those will be in the knockout stages. Can't wait till December 5th either. That's when we'll find out the draw of the World Cup and who is coming to Houston, Texas. All right, so final segment tonight, I want to get into the 1978 FIFA World Cup and just do a little bit of a flashback to that. And again, these are great to just kind of measure where the World Cup is now, going into a 48-team tournament to where it was then. So here we go. 1978 FIFA World Cup, 11th edition of the tournament. It was held in Argentina, and it went from basically, it was only a little over 3 weeks. The reason being there's only 16 teams in the World Cup back at that time. 38 matches were played. Argentina would get their first World Cup title. Now, remember, this was a controversial tournament. The runner-up, the Netherlands, right? And Johan Cruyff was not there. So that was the second consecutive tournament that the Netherlands ended up being runners-up. First one in Germany, 1974, with Cruyff on the team. This one without Cruyff. Brazil won the third place tournament game over Italy. So Mario Kempes was the star of this, and you might see him sometimes on ESPN commentating. He had 6 goals. He also won the Golden Ball as the best player of the tournament. So back then, with only 16 teams, you had 4 groups of 4. The top 2 teams from each group advanced. It was real simple. And then that's how you got there. And then the winners would meet in the final. At the time, politically, and this was a big piece of this tournament because Argentina was trying to paint a pretty picture about their country because they had military dictatorship led by General Jorge Rafael Videla. There was a lot of politics around this, sadly. And it was, again, one of these things to project a country and a positive image when there was a lot of human rights abuses going on. And there was criticism internationally. So the big controversy of this tournament, though, the big controversy was Argentina-Peru, and Argentina had to win by 4 goals in order to get to the final ahead of Brazil. So they had to win by 4. They won by 6, which immediately ignited suspicion, pressure, people coming up with theories of manipulation, players throwing the game. And to this day, it is probably one of the most controversial games in World Cup history. So we'll get back to that in a minute. Let's stay on that. So if you go back in history, there are some players later on in life that came out from that Peru team and said things to the media. Now, whether they were paid or not, who knows? And these are accusations, so I don't know. There's no definitive proof, I guess. Jose Velasquez said that 6 Peruvian players were sold. He named 4 of them: Rodolfo Manzo, Raul Gorrite, Juan José Muñante, and Ramón Quiroga. He also alleged that the coach had been warned by players about this. So Jose Velasquez said it was potentially thrown. Juan Carlos Oblitas said the same thing. And he actually said that the Argentine dictator came in the dressing room before the game, and Henry Kissinger from the U.S. was there as well. But again, nobody provided any proof that the matches were fixed. But when 2 players come out, it leads to, you know, a lot of suspicion, a lot of conjecture, and a lot of thoughts about, was this really fixed? So let's get back to the final. So it's Argentina at home. Now, Argentina got to the final by beating Hungary. They played in River Plate's Monumental. They then beat France 2-1. Playing for France was Michel Platini. And then they lost their final group game to Italy. So they qualify, they get to the second round. In the second round, they beat Poland 2-0. They tie Brazil 0-0, and then they get to the important Argentina's 6-0 victory over Peru that got them to the final. So the final was in 1978 at the Estadio Monumental in Buenos Aires. That's the home of River Plate. You'll remember the unbelievable confetti coming down. I mean, it was incredible. The whole stadium was draped in just so much pomp and circumstance. Argentina beats the Netherlands 3-1. Kempes scored first. Dirk Nanniga scored in the 82nd. In stoppage time, to win it, Rob Rensenbrink, who would come to America ultimately to play in the North American Soccer League for the Netherlands, hit the post. I think he was on Portland, maybe. Yeah, I think Rensenbrink went to Portland. I think so. In extra time, Mario Kempes scores and Daniel Bertoni scores for Argentina. And you have the general celebrating and the whole country going wild. Argentina were the champions for the first time ever. Of course, they want to win the World Cup at home. You know, of course. The general, Jorge Videla, was very present, appeared at matches. Stadiums had slogans and all kinds of the colors of Argentina. There were restrictions, apparently, on foreign journalists. Any protesting was suppressed. And there was a lot of human rights abuse going on. And I'm not going to get into that, but there was a lot of it. Kempes was the hero. And by the way, that Argentina team, back then, again, players aren't traveling all over the world. Mario Kempes was the only player playing overseas. He was at Valencia in Spain. Do you remember the Adidas Tango ball? Well, that was the ball that was used, the Tango. And that ball kind of was, it may be the most famous World Cup ball of all. I'm not sure, but it's pretty famous. Except for that crazy one they used in, I think, South Africa that was moving all over the place. And goalkeepers were complaining about it. Anyway, the Argentine victory was a big triumph. It was a political statement as well for the country. And to this day, it gets still debated. quite a bit, I think, from people. So Kempes finished the tournament with 6 goals, 2 goals in the final. He gets the player of the tournament. Other noteworthy guys for Argentina, Leopoldo Luque, who was a forward with River Plate. He had 4 goals, had some of the key goals in the group stages. You had, you know, the very tough captain and defender, Daniel Pastarella. He scored a penalty against France, but he would ultimately go and coach Argentina one day, if I'm not mistaken. But Pastarella was a tough, tough defender. And then you had very much a goalkeeper that you remember his image, Ubaldo Filol, who is also with River Plate. So he was considered one of the great Argentine goalkeepers of all time. Argentina scored the most goals in the tournament with 15. And the attendance at the final, again, which, I mean, if you watch this thing, the amount of confetti coming down and streamers on the field, players running through the streamers and confetti, the final drew 71,483 at River Plate Stadium. And by the way, River Plate, that stadium, I mean, what a draw they are in Argentina. So the Dutch, again, maybe we call them the greatest team that's never won a World Cup. They reached the second straight final. This time they did it without Johan Cruyff. Cruyff didn't go. There was a whole bunch of theories as to why he didn't go. One of them was that prior to the tournament, somebody broke and entered into his house and threatened his family. The other was a whirlpool that his wife got upset because there was some other women in the whirlpool, and his wife said he couldn't go. There was a whole bunch of theories as to why Cruyff didn't go, so that adds to the mystery around this tournament as well. And, you know, you often sit here and wonder, well, what would have Johan Cruyff done to affect the Netherlands if he was there? Would they have won the tournament? And by the way, that tells you how good the Dutch were. You know, they get to a final without Johan Cruyff, right? You basically extracted the leader of the team, your coach on the field, and you still get to the final. Brazil, by the way, was undefeated in this tournament, but they missed the final due to goal difference, obviously with that Argentina 6-0 win. So, pretty crazy. Like I said, over the years, Peruvian players have made public statements. You always have to wonder if somebody's paying him to go out and say that. But that's kind of where it is. There was no smoking gun proof. Nobody, you know, that anybody accepted a bribe or anything. There's no records. So the allegations, way after the fact now, can be interpreted any way anybody wants to. But you can say it was fixed. You can say it wasn't fixed. There's no proof. Yeah, I guess the other thing that I didn't mention was potentially that players were threatened or coerced rather than, you know, getting someone saying that they were going to bribe them or pay them. So it's kind of the history of the 1978 World Cup. Again, it was 16 teams. It's hard to believe there's 48 teams now. And it was one that was memorable for me because I was a big Dutch fan at the time. And as I had mentioned on prior shows in 1974, that was the tournament that really opened my eyes to the World Cup. I had heard about 70, but 74, you know, I went, as I mentioned on the show many times, I went to Madison Square Garden and watched the final on closed circuit television between West Germany and the Netherlands at that time. So it was a big tournament for me because I wanted the Dutch to win. And I guess to this day, we say the Netherlands is the greatest team to have never won a World Cup. My good friend at Team Houston, Jan-Luc, probably doesn't want to hear this show tonight. Be reminded of it. But Dutch still remain one of the great soccer-playing nations of all time. You know, it's hard not to say that they aren't, but they just have not won the World Cup. And Rinus Michels is the man who created the whole Total Football along with Cruyff. And, oh, I failed to mention the coach of Argentina, the legendary one, El Flaco, Cesar Luis Menotti. And his style of soccer was very attacking, very Argentine. Later on, Argentina would get a little bit more pragmatic under Carlos Bilardo. Argentines would call him, you know, anti-football. They would come out criticizing him. But Menotti always goes down in history as being the coach that took Argentina to their first World Cup title. The other thing about him was he brought Mario Kempes back, who did not score a goal in the 74 World Cup, but then exploded. And, you know, the team was domestic-based. I mean, I think that's why Argentina, in modern soccer now also, has a bit of an advantage, because there's not a lot of dual nationals. You know, there's no dual nationals. They're all Argentine. They really pray, not pray, but they really, I think in a very honest way, just have such a pride for playing football for Argentina and the country. I think they also feel the fan of their country. Like, it's a big responsibility, right? And those fans put real, real pressure on Argentina. But from a cultural perspective, because they don't have dual nationals, they're all guys that were born in Argentina for the most part. I think all of them. There is something about that that's galvanizing. There's something about that that's galvanizing. By the way, Menotti went on to later coach Barcelona, Atletico Madrid. So, yeah, he's a big figure in this World Cup win as well. They called his attacking philosophy La Nuestra. All about technique, possession, combination play. They played with winners. Rene Hausmann, that was another great name that just popped into my mind. But they had wingers, and it was an expression of Argentine culture. I don't think there's any question. Kempes was the deep-lying forward, but also kind of like an attacking midfielder. He could come out of midfield. Luque was the center forward. Bertone and Hausmann gave the width to the team. And then you had Ozzy Ardiles as well in the midfield. Excellent on the ball. Gallego, I remember that name as well. Tarantini in defense. If you remember, Tarantini and Ardiles made a big switch, which wasn't happening a lot at the time. Both of them went to Spurs in England. But Kempes was a big deal because kind of had a free roll. You would get into the box late in that tournament. And there you go. That's how they won it. So, beautiful football, artistic, cultural for Argentina. And that was a big deal in them winning it. It was a Menotti 4-3-3, if we sum it up. A lot of attacking flair. You had the free roll of Kempes. You had good wingers to compensate for that and pull apart opponents. So there you go. And, well, one day maybe we'll compare Bilardo's 86 Argentina team with Diego Maradona to the 78 team simply based on the way the game was played. All right, that sums it up tonight here. I hope you enjoyed that. It was a great flashback there. It makes me remember a number of things and makes me do a little bit of homework on it to get my mind refreshed. I hope you enjoyed Destination 2026 tonight, presented by Houston Methodist, Coca-Cola Southwest, Quanta. Also, visit Sugarland, and also Energy. So we hope you appreciated this. We're getting ready for the World Cup here in Houston. You see all kinds of activity downtown, green spaces being created, roads being fixed. There's a lot going on here. And in the blink of an eye, it will be here. That's going to do it tonight. For producer Brian McDonald, I'm Glenn Davis. Till next Wednesday night. Remember, it's Destination 2026, Houston's countdown to the Cup. Hope you enjoyed last night's Soccer Matters. Both of these shows you can get at the podcast, ESPN975.com. You can also pick them up By the way, at Spotify Podcasts and Apple Podcasts. And until next Tuesday night when we return with Soccer Matters and then Wednesday with Destination 2026, I'm Glenn Davis. Good night, everyone.